Good evening, everybody.
Well, it's so good to be here tonight.
All right, so tonight I want to speak about focus. Everybody say focus. The question is where? But isn't it interesting that at this stage of where we are on this earth, isn't there so much distractions, or is it just me? Okay, so it's not just me. So you guys are with me that there's so many distractions going on this earth. It's sometimes very, very difficult to keep our focus and to sort of go, you know, this is what. Sorry, ek sit amper op julle skoot. That's the anointed spit. Here is he. All right, but tonight I just want you to search your hearts, because, you know, even through the worship and so on, and even what was shared, it is clear that God has got our best interest in heart. I mean, we serve a loving, holy Father, and He desires that we need to be holy. You know, in the Bible He says this thing that freaks me out quite often, that He says, be holy as I'm holy. And I go, oops, here I help. Okay, so I'm kind of in that sort of having a moment with God in that regard. And even when we prayed beforehand, you know what I saw? I've never seen this physically, but this is what I hear happens, is when you want to purify gold, you heat that baby up. I mean, it's like va-va-voom fire. Okay, so you heat it up, and what happens? Die gemors kom boontoe, right? So the dross goes up, and then you have to take something and you have to remove that dross. And the actual, from what I understand now, and if there's jewelers here, then please just help me. But from what I understand, the more they do it, the better the karat, goud. What's karat in English? Carat. All right, we're not going to go there. But the better quality the gold becomes. This is only 9 carats, so I guess it wasn't in the fire so long. Apparently, 18 and 24, it needs to be there quite some time longer. But I have that sense in my spirit that tonight, that is part of what the Holy Spirit wants to do. He's come into our lives and heat up the flame a bit so that He can remove some of that dross. So are you ready?
Yes.
Yeah, let's not convincing me. All right, so for the three that are ready, okay, good. I'll preach the front row. All right, so just maybe to sketch a bit of context of what I want to look at, I want to look at 2 Timothy tonight. Okay, so you can go to 2 Timothy, but I'm sort of just going to give a broad overview, because there's a few things that I just want to lift out there. And the first thing is that Timothy was written that during the persecutions initiated by Nero. This was sort of AD 64, and apparently Nero died in AD 68, so he had 4 years of persecution, and Timothy was sort of written in that period, and that is why Paul finds himself in jail. He's being persecuted, he's been cast in there, it's like Stouter Boyke, right? You're preaching the word, we don't like you. So Timothy was sort of, from what I understand, written AD 66, 67, more or less there. There's no clear indication of precisely what happens there. Now, as I said, Paul finds him in a jail. Now, the previous time he was in jail, he was in Rome as well, but he was locked up in a house, private house, where he's you know, the people that he was discipling could come to him and visit him, and he could keep on ministering. But this time, he finds himself in a dungeon. Now, I've never been in a dungeon, but I don't know if you've done this tour of the Castile. You know, and there's this place where they take you there, right there, right where there's deep. And they show you the scratches on the wall, and then they close that door. And there's no sun, no nothing. I mean, there's donker. It's like, I can understand you can lose it there. Yeah, it's like, it smelled muff, man. And apparently there was rats and stuff, you know, so you had competition. You know, it's me or the rats kind of situation. And when I read this, I kind of go, so this must be where Paul finds himself in this dungeon. This stinking, it's moist, it's not lekker. It's a terrible place to be in. And his friends and the people that loved him could only come to him and see him, but with great difficulty. So they didn't have free access to him at this stage. So he's kind of alone. Apparently he had Luke with him. The rest all departed for various reasons. So he's sitting there. And in this situation, he is longing to see Timothy. He's got concern for Timothy. I mean, he writes to him as Timothy, my son. So he's got concern for him. And also, he left a cloak there and some personal stuff that he actually wanted to get back. But his desire is to see Timothy. Where he, initially when he was incarcerated, he sort of had hopes of being released. But now he's at the point where he realizes that he's about to die. You know, his death is imminent. This is it. His ticket is getting stamped. He's checking out. So now there's a different urgency in him to write this letter to Timothy, to speak to him about the church and what he's doing, and to urge him not to stop doing what he's doing. All right? So Timothy is living in a scene where you know, there's all sorts of opinions and stuff happening, and that we're going to get into. Similar to where we're finding ourselves today. There's stuff happening in our lives. There's things happening. And it's almost like, you know, Paul is writing to us saying, yo, jylle moet wakker word. There's a few things coming and I need you to be awake. All right, so let's dive into Timothy. In chapter 1, it's going to be there. All right, chapter 1, he picks it up. And he reminds him, firstly, of the legacy that he has in his mother. That his mother was, from what we can understand, anointed woman of God. And because of that, you know, God has chosen Timothy for the work that he's doing. So he's reminding him, listen, you've got a ma that's seriously cool in the spirit, and you know, this is who you are. Okay? And he must stir up the gift that God has placed in him, and therefore he's called him by name. Now, how many of you believe that you know, you've received a gift from God? Julle is starig vanaand. Is net ek wat voel of ek op overdrive is. Okay. So if you haven't received a gift from God yet, we'll lay hands on you for you to receive it, because that's what happened in Timothy's life. They were laying on of hands. He received this promise from God, and this is what Paul is reminding him of. Okay, he says, hey, buddy, you don't have time to waste. There's a call on your life. You know, you cannot sit still anymore. You need to do this. All right. Okay, and he has not received the spirit of fear. Now, listen, in our day and age, just to bring that context, it becomes quite intimidating when they're talking about locking Christians up and, you know, getting rid of, you know, Christianity and all these kind of things. It becomes slightly intimidating. Or is it just me? All right, so I guess this is the same type of situation where he's saying, listen, man, regardless of what's happening, you have not received the spirit of fear, but one of power and love and a sound mind. And then that's what you need to walk in. That's what you need to pursue. So don't look at what's going on around you. Look at that. In chapter 2, he goes, okay, so now you know that you are called. You know you've received the spirit. Now take the stuff that you have learned and entrust it to faithful men and women. Teach others. You know, don't be so, what do you call it, caught up in mental ascent and be so impressed with yourself that you know so much that you just keep all that information to yourself. And you can now look very cool because you've got something to say. He says, no. I want you to take what you have learned, and I want you to take guys from around you, and I want you to teach them. Impart to them what you have received. Okay, then he says, remain focused. He uses two examples there. Examples. Yes, there's Afrikaans die. This is dodgy. Stricken from the record. All right, so two examples. The first one is that of a soldier. Who of you have been in the army? Cheers. It was only for the select few. But in the army, you as a soldier, now you have to trust me, you know, I've been there, I've did this. There's no ways that you can walk up to the corporal or lieutenant or general, then you're crazy, but in any case, and you go, I'm not doing this. Verstaan jy my? As jy dit gedoen wil, hey, buddy, you gaan grou daai gat yourself. I mean, there's no chance that you can go. Even a corporal, even a junior corporal that's just got one line, sitting here, it's like the lowest of the low, Without that line, he's a troop. He's like me. I'm just a troop. But he's got one line. If that guy, just with one line, says, hardloop, then you start running, and while you're running, you ask how far. So there's no disobedience. So he's saying, listen, you must be like a soldier that's been enlisted, and you obey the one that has enlisted you. So you cannot tell or say to the one that's enlisted you, I'm not doing this, do it yourself. Now, unfortunately, in the Christian walk, we kind of do a bit of that, where we tell the one that's enlisted us to, maybe it's a good idea to send someone else, you know? Okay, but he's saying, remain focused. As a soldier, as you go to war, as you do these things that you have been enlisted for, you need to stay focused. You cannot get distracted with stuff that the normal people that are not enlisted do. In other words, they go to work, they do all these things, but you as a soldier, you cannot do that. You need to listen to the one that's enlisted to you. Right. Okay? And then the other example.